right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, May 19th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy wet, soaked, soggy Tuesday for anyone who had any of those storms last night. We had hot, humid, and pretty nasty here, but nothing wicked like some of my friends down south last night. So I hope everybody's safe and did not have to get out their whitewater raft and save themselves. It was a pretty crazy night. Can't wait to see some of the footage on Weather Channel at dinner. That seems to be the new thing. Every night at dinner, I flip on the Weather Channel and here's some new storm porn going on. It's been pretty exciting. Gotta love it. Anyway, it is 68 degrees here and mostly cloudy. 68% humidity, too, so it's pretty... It's pretty sweaty. I had the air conditioner on out here all night, so it actually feels kind of chilly right now, but I'm sure it won't be by the time the show is over. All right, so what are we going to look at today? I was just going through some pretty humorous and yet disturbing stories from last night that I don't know if I'm going to actually talk about because they're really off topic, but maybe we'll find our way to one or two of those by the end of the show. But yesterday, what we talked about was that damn pesky internet and how the government is going to protect us from that pesky internet with algorithms and artificial intelligence. Because, yes, the internet is evil. The internet is what is doing this to all of us. It is radicalizing our children. It has become now, according to the new head of the NSA and Mr. Cyber Patrol himself, it has become a weapons system. And with that Memex that we talked about yesterday, that was a DARPA project that they were now going to put out there in open source, they will be able to bag and tag everything you write and do online and then use an algorithm to identify who the insurgents are. So look out, everybody. It's that algorithm's coming to get you. Algorithms under every bed, gnawing at your ankles. We also saw that there were some new startup groups that were creating a new line of business called something like behavioral monitoring services that will be monitoring your online behavior and then selling that information to places like, oh, I don't know, the credit agencies. And they seem to think that they'll be able to predict based upon where you are, what kind of neighborhoods you go visit, using your metadata as well as posts to social media, what kind of a lender, a lendee, I guess you would call it, or a payer backer of loans you will be and whether or not you are a credit risk. So, I know, like I said yesterday, put on a seatbelt, pretty scary stuff. Thought crime is right on the front burner, being able to predict emotions and tell what kind of a person you're going to be and what type of future actions you're going to take is just the very beginning as they crack more mysteries of the brain with the Brain Project, which is a global project that everybody's dumped bazillions of dollars into. Look out. I actually caught a story. You know, we've talked about the dangling carrots for a while. And I think I might get into some of the brain. There is some disease news, some microbiome news, some Bill Gates drinks piss water news. That was actually gave me a lot of pleasure. Here's one, though, that kind of got me. You know, we've talked about dangling carrots, dopamine, how they use video games and smartphones to addict us that then gives us this fix of brain chemicals that does work on the same brain chemicals as addictions such as cocaine, cigarettes, heroin, that type of stuff. There's one other thing here that caught my attention. You know, here we are in this downward Western spiral for Western civ as we knew it, and jobs are leaving the country quicker than we can even blink an eye, and with this TPP and TPPIP, TPIP, Tippy, Tippy, no, TPIP, I think it is, and TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership and Trans-whatever, I don't know. The other one's for like Europe and countries that way, and then one's for the South Pacific Rim. You know, is there voting here to allow fast track so there's no negotiation whatsoever on these trade bills that, oh, by the way, nobody got to read? You have to wonder if it isn't going to be another big sucking sound like we had with the NAFTA trade agreement that happened 20-some-odd years ago that sucked half of our manufacturing out of this country. But as this is all going on, there's one part of the economy that's doing great, and they sold this to us. Hold on, I need to call myself. That was the one thing I didn't get to do, so hold on one second. Hold the phone. Literally, hold the phone. We got to find Jay. There we go. Jay. Ed. Now I just got to answer. Come on, ring. There we go. All right, so as our economy and the Western world is kind of being sucked down the drain, and hopefully this isn't crashing everything. I don't know, this computer's acting kind of funky. There is one part of the economy that seems to be doing well, and we were given the promise way back when that it was going to help fund education, so everybody bought into it easily, but here we go.
If it plays. Americans gambled more than $70 billion on lottery games, and a lot of those dollars came from people who can least afford to lose the money. Derek Thompson, senior editor of The Atlantic magazine, covered this story this week, and he's here to break it down. Good morning to you, Derek.
Good morning.
So what did you find in this story?
So millions of people play the lottery, but the lottery is played particularly among those who are lower income. As John Oliver said, we spend more money. The stat that I thought was most striking, we spend more on the lottery, $70 billion now in 2014, than on sports tickets, movie tickets, video games, books. It's just astonishing. It's more than a enormous share of energy.
The lottery has now overtaken all of those other distractions because you're hoping to win a piece of the pie. But $70 billion, with a B, $70 billion spent in a year on the lottery for the hope of getting the American dream that is no longer within our reach.
Entertainment. But it's not just entertainment for poor people. A half of all ticket sales, according to Duke University, occur among the poorest third of the country. So a lot of people are obviously considering this not just fun, but also a bit of an investment. They're being preyed on for their hope.
You liken this to a...
Now, I'm going to stop. Preyed on for their hope. Where have we heard that before? Doesn't that seem to be the newest modus operandi? Make us want, so then we step right up and hope and allow them to execute any of their evil plans upon us that they want. We're hopeful we're going to win $1 million. We're hopeful you're going to cure us of cancer. We're hopeful that you're going to protect us from ISIS under every bed. Please, please help us.
A prayer against poverty, which I thought was a very interesting expression.
Yeah, I mean, it truly is. And, you know, one really interesting study that they did is they said, all right, in order to prove that this is not just entertainment, it is also a prayer against poverty, let's compare it to something else, movie tickets. So these clever professors said, all right, let's take a look at poorer people. Do they, as you get poorer, do you spend more on movie tickets? No. Do you spend more on lottery tickets? Yes. So this is clearly something that lower-income people are thinking of as not just a fun way to spend. It is an average of $300 per person throughout the country, but as high as $800 per person in Rhode Island. They're really spending this as a kind of prayer combined with savings.
I think a lot of people who watch this, though, might say, but it's a voluntary choice. Do you feel like they are being targeted in any particular way to buy more tickets?
We know that they're being targeted. We know that they're being targeted and that lottery tickets are being advertised the most in low-income areas precisely because marketing 101, lower-income people are more likely to buy the ticket. But the reason that I think this is super problematic is that, you know, you look back 40 years ago and you didn't have state lotteries in 43 states. You had it in one. In 1980, you only had it in about a dozen. And now they're basically all around the country, and it's become a way to fund government, to tax for education, for economic development. They absolutely rely on it. It's a way essentially to enact a tax without actually calling it a tax, calling it voluntary spending. And
now, doesn't that bother you? I just, you know, I mean, absolutely, we know that the lottery system, despite all the promises, just like the toll road system, you know, they were going to put in these tolls, and they were only going to be temporary, and it was going to pay for the highway. And did those tolls ever go away? No. Did a large organization grow up around those tolls that you collect on a daily basis, day in, day out, year in, year out? Yes. Are they big, fat, paying state jobs that you probably can't get fired from? Yes. Is there a massive bureaucracy? Yes. And do they use that money for other things besides the roads? Of course they do. It's just more ways to suck out the fixtures from the room without us realizing that they're doing it. It's called sleight of hand. And it is using brain chemicals, hope, fear. You know what? There's no other choice. You don't have a retirement. So put all your extra money into buying a lottery ticket because it could be you.
That seems pernicious to me precisely because you're asking the lowest income people to pay for this.
So Who is saving money in this because lower income people are putting in the money? Who doesn't have to put in money?
The state. The state doesn't have to tax richer people. The corporate income taxes actually no longer account for nearly as much money to fund education, environmental upkeep, economic development as it used to. Now it truly is a kind of thing where they rely on the prayers of the poor in order to fund the essentials of government.
This is really fascinating, Derek Thompson. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
They rely on the prayers of the poor to fund the government. When I heard that, that really bothered me. But even better than that, so I saw that clip. That was from like 2 days ago. So I sit down to dinner. I flip on my good old weather channel to see which part of the country got inundated with inches of rain, mega storms and tornadoes overnight, because like I said, that's the Weather Channel's new reality TV. And I see a New York State lottery ad that I thought was new, but when I searched it yesterday, it actually ends up, it was a couple year old ad. But tell me what these states actually think of people buying lottery tickets when you hear something like this. If this was the commercial, hold on, it's doing the reel at the beginning. Beep, beep, 4, 3, 2. And now, when you see the scene, it is a post-apocalyptic New York City. No people anywhere, garbage blowing around. Crows. And masses of zombies walking down the street.
Okay, just keep going. Stick together, guys.
The New York Mega Millions jackpot is now millions of dollars. That's millions and millions of dollars.
So the zombies come to the front of this storefront where there's three people standing with like a golf club and a baseball bat, and the zombies are all coming to the window and they smash the glass. And as soon as they smash the glass, the TV turns on and there's that New York State lottery guy saying that the lottery is worth millions and millions of dollars. And at that very moment, all the zombies turn around and run and head toward the newspaper stand by the subway. Now, what does that say about how New York, and I'm sure other states, view the lottery buying public? Like, I thought, wow, how fucking offensive is that when they're putting out ads that show the populace as being a bunch of zombies? And Jane in chat, yes, you are very correct. I was going to mention that during the clip. So here they go building these casinos now in these lower income areas. First casino that I had ever been to was Atlantic City. My sister took me there on the overnight fast bus that the guy was doing like 110 in the dark, zipping in and out of traffic. I thought we were going to die. To go gamble overnight for 8 hours and then head back home. And Atlantic City is another one of those places that, you know, once you're, when you're at the casino, it's fun, but you don't want to go anywhere outside of the casino. They did the same thing here in Niagara Falls. You know, Niagara Falls on the U.S. side is pretty desolate, And there isn't much industry at all. It's pretty gross, actually. The Canadians did a much better job of developing the Niagara Falls waterfront. But the one thing they did put, and they let the Native Americans have it because there was a reservation up there, they put a big casino. Now, I'm sure that that casino does great, but I'm sure that the people that come into that casino aren't spending their dollars in any way, shape, or form in the neighborhoods outside of the casino because there really isn't too much there. It's a very poor area. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out, the way that they use psychology to manipulate us. And we found out yesterday from a story out of Telegraph, but I saw it now in a couple different science magazines as well, how humans have a shorter attention span than goldfish thanks to the smartphones. All right, so where do we go to now? I don't know, I had a show kind of laid out in my head, but then I sort of lost it. One of the things, actually, here's a follow-up from a few weeks ago when we were looking at the bird flu epidemic spreading. You know, it still amazes me how none of this has really made it to the mainstream yet, but there has been a fourth state now, and I have to find it. I think it was like we had Iowa, Wisconsin, hold on. See, what happens is when we get too far behind the eight ball, then it makes it really difficult for me to find the stories that we've been planning on reading. All right, Nebraska actually becomes the fourth state to declare the emergency over bird flu. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts declared a state of emergency on Thursday. So this was 15th. This was last week, 4 days ago, the story came out. He's declared a state of emergency from the rapidly spreading bird flu virus. The decision was made after federal agricultural officials confirmed a second farm site tested positive for the disease. And what's pretty insane here is I see a screenshot of a video that looks like it went out as a tweet that shows the bird flu outbreak since mid-December. Let's look at all these states. We have the ones that we know, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, and now Nebraska. But we also have Indiana, which I thought we looked at in the very beginning, Kentucky, I didn't know, Arkansas, Missouri, Kansas, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and California. Guys, that is pretty mega huge. 16th state now to report cases of bird flu in a flock since December. Says the state of emergency declaration has given us additional tools to effectively deal with the disease. Yeah, what? So are they going to do like what Minnesota did and call out the National Guard to spray foam the freaking chickens and suffocate them? And it was just so horrifying. And that never made mainstream. That was just local news that was reported in. It says, we have a poultry sector valued at $1.1 billion. So obviously the impacts of avian influenza will be far-reaching, said Ricketts in a press conference. Nebraska's decision follows earlier actions taken by governors in the hardest hit states of Iowa, which, yes, Iowa produces one of every five eggs consumed in the United States. The hardest hit states of Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. The virus has led to now the culling of what? 33 million birds in 16 states. Governor Ricketts said the state has already benefited from state and federal agencies. Quote, the Nebraska Department of Agriculture is coordinating with several state agencies for a thorough, expeditious response. While not a human threat, so they say, the discovery of avian influenza is a serious situation in our poultry sector, and I want to provide responders with access to all the appropriate tools to address it, he said. So, like this doublespeak there, so it makes you wonder, are they going to be enabling MRAPs to come out and battle the bird flu like they did in Africa with Ebola? Declaring a state of emergency opens the door to releasing funds and aids to the Nebraska Department of Agriculture as well as to other state agencies to contain the bird flu outbreak and it gives agencies the power to track, monitor, and respond. Track, monitor, and respond. Track, monitor, and respond. Those seem to be the three newest keywords for anything and everything. Track, monitor, and respond. To confirm cases of the virus throughout the state, containing those animals already confirmed to have the disease. You know, this to me, if I didn't know any better, almost sounds like it could be some other great way to perform drills right under our noses. And, hey, supply and demand. Now there's going to be less poultry, so all the poultry farmers can make out huge. It also grants them culling, disinfection, and disposal powers and lets them conduct ding-ding surveillance and early detection practices to stop the spread of the disease. Now, if we, and I don't know if we've talked about this recently, but I know that when September 11th happened and we were all worried about anthrax attacks in big cities, especially New York, they had been working on these little mini biosensors that they were putting all over the city, sticking them on like telephone poles and stuff, that will be able to detect an entire gamut of virulent pathogens and send early warning alerts that there had been a Typhoid Mary that had released something. And look at how now, as all of these never before seen, the worst we've ever seen, oh my God, we're all going to die type outbreaks that have been happening over the last year or so across the country. And now it's all about surveillance, monitoring, and response. Having a second farm in Nebraska confirmed to have the highly pathogenic avian influenza is unfortunate, but not completely unexpected, said the Nebraska Department of Agriculture Director Gary Ibach to reporters at Reuters. Ibach said the number of chickens that have died or will be killed has grown to more than 3.5 million in Nebraska. Both Nebraskan farms are under quarantine. Duh, duh, duh. See, they got to get us used to this stuff. Quarantine, illnesses, surveillance, monitoring, and appropriate responses, typically by military or paramilitary groups. Reuters reported that the U.S. poultry and egg industry have been struggling for months with the biggest outbreak on record. Until this week, the outbreak was concentrated in western states, and on Monday, the virus was detected in an Indiana backyard poultry flock. And, you know, here's another thing I was just thinking about. So as we took a look at protecting us from that pesky internet yesterday, because, you know, before that, it was all about protecting us from those pesky anti-vaxxers. And before that, what was it? I mean, we can just keep going back and back. There's always a target that they're trying to make a point about, and then get people to cry because we're being attacked by some new boogeyman, and the government is always the one that can step in and save us. So, you know, in this pesky internet attack now, they can hack planes and they can, you know, convert your child and get them to fly over to Syria. They can now be weapons control systems of the internet to be able to command an attack at some cartoon Charlie Hebdo event in Texas, which there was some really strange stuff about that. I don't know. I didn't talk about it, but we found a footage clip that actually showed at the very last 5 seconds of the clip, and I did a story about it, and it really didn't get any legs, but they actually showed while those cops were sweeping the grounds of Garland, Texas, that school or stadium or wherever the hell it was. It was some big meeting place that they were having that event. They showed the cops actually sweeping during daylight while it was happening, the grounds. It was raw footage, no reporter narration. It was actually the very first video that Pigmine had gotten right as the event was unfolding. And at the very end of that clip, the very end, they showed one of the Garland police with a guy who looked just like I mean, almost identical. And I mean, it wasn't super close up, but it was close enough. You could see the guy had the same hair, the same chin line, the same beard. They had actually had a guy in custody, hands handcuffed behind his back, bent over the back of the cruiser, and they were showing the cop going through his pockets. And then not, I don't know, an hour or two later, we had two dead quote-unquote terrorists. And as a matter of fact, the guy had on dark pants and a light shirt, the one that was being arrested. And lo and behold, in the helicopter shots you saw from later on in the evening of the two dead bodies laying supposedly on the ground in the road next to the car where they had the anti-bomb units going in and checking the car with the robot to see whether or not there was a car. One of those guys had a light shirt and dark pants on. Not one other news outlet actually showed any of that footage. Actually, it was USA Today that had that clip. We saved it. I downloaded it too because it was highly suspicious. And who were these people? And he happened to be the one that wasn't the one that they have been making a big story about. He kind of faded into the memory hole. But I'm telling you, there was some weird stuff about that Texas event. And now Texas, with this biker event, is even more suspect in my eyes. I saw Zori post something on Facebook this morning, and she asked a very good question. Where was all the blood? After all, nine people were killed, gunned down in that parking lot. And I didn't see one drop of blood either, Zori. So thank you. That's a very good question. I saw last night the original news report had said that 192 people had been arrested from that brawl. Now the number seems to be down to around 170. But Blood, Jack Blood posted a story either last night or this morning that it asked another very good question. Because now they're saying that these bikers are potentially domestic terrorists. Of course they are. Domestic terrorists, last bastions of freedom. You know, motorcycle riders, freewheeling, rock and roll, booze and guns. And Texas was the one that actually had a governor. Regardless of how ridiculous some people think the whole Jade Helm question has been. You know, we talked to Brandon last Friday, and he was telling us about the South Carolina military drills that were going on in conjunction with the local police departments and sheriffs, and how they were doing door-to-door wellness checks. I mean, this is the same story over and over again. They are trying to groom us. They are trying to make us used to the fact that, hey, the military is here to help us. Now, I was watching, too, on the Weather Channel at dinner. They were showing another area in Texas because it's the Texas show now on a nightly basis for us to watch all the storms and then all the people who have been stranded with floods, hit with tornadoes, and all their belongings destroyed. And who comes to the rescue? The National Guard, military helicopters, MRAPs. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And they're showing them in this loving light as they're coming down in their Black Hawk helicopter yesterday. And I swear to God, they pointed out it was a Black Hawk, too, to come save people trapped in their trailer homes who were in high ground just outside the outskirts of Dallas from the floodwaters. Oh, and they're just praising how wonderful it is that we have military services to be able to protect us on the homeland. Now, I don't know, color me silly, but don't we have a Department of Homeland Security and a FEMA group that we're supposed to be doing that we dump millions, if not billions of dollars into? Like, where are they? Why is it all of a sudden the military that's stepping up, saving us from bird flu or Ebola or, I don't know, measles outbreaks, which that didn't happen, but it could have. All right, so anyway, I read that bird flu story, and there was one more story I wanted to talk about, getting into pathogens. And this made me actually think more about Texas, because remember the dog flu? Started in Chicago, and it spread through a couple other states. I don't remember where they were warning, but they were saying, you know, be careful traveling, people. Be afraid traveling now that it's vacation and summer season, because this bird flu or this dog flu, whoops, that seems to be a bird flu, but isn't a bird flu. We're not going to tell you it's a bird flu. Only in some articles we'll tell you it's a bird flu. But this dog flu, never before seen, most virulent, though it doesn't kill your dogs necessarily, but dogs can act as a disease vector, remember? They're setting you up for future. A veterinarian now believes, and this is from May 14th, epidemic dog flu is now in Texas. Ha! Austin. Canine influenza has been called a serious epidemic involving a viral strain of never before seen. Remember, I told you, ding, ding, ding. How amazing is it? I think I need to go spend some of the nation's $70 billion on the fucking lottery, because in 1 week's time, the never before scenes that I run across are just astounding. I mean, what are the chances? Maybe I'll hit it big on the lotto and become one of the lotto zombifications. Canine influenza has been called a serious epidemic involving a viral strain of never before seen in the United States. And one veterinarian believes it may be in Central Texas. Like humans, dogs can get vaccinated. Oh, yes. Remember, they were lining the dogs all up. They were recommending that you take Fido. Fido, who they've now discovered when he blinks his cute little eyes at you, causes your body to produce oxytocin, which is the same chemical that your body produces when you blink at the beautiful eyes of your newborn infant. Yes, Fido gets your heartstrings pulled, and it's another attack against the anti-vaxxers, because look, now there's disease everywhere. And you anti-vaxxer people, you're the one responsible for spreading the measles to Johnny so it ruined his Disneyland trip. You're the one responsible for getting Fido sick. You're the one responsible for getting Henny My Hen sick, because you didn't get the new avian flu vaccine, which, by the way, they're working on. And they're not just working on it for poultry, but they were talking about making it a prophylaxis for humans as well. There were talks of that. And it's coming. They're developing it right now because, of course, there had to be a need. See, there wasn't a need before December of 2014, except in China. Like humans, dogs can get vaccinated for the most common versions of canine flu. But currently, there is no specific vaccine for this strain. But get them vaccinated anyway, like they said, just like they tell us. And experts do not know if the current one will even help protect dogs from getting sick. Homeopathic veterinarian Will Falconer diagnosed Sarah Stratman's 3-year-old Akita with canine influenza. Aw, little Akita. Those are really cute little doggies. They look like little stuffed animals. Stratman said Mika was sneezing, feverish, and had runny eyes and a severe cough. And I mean, here's the thing. This time of year, if you go out to weatherchannel.com, I know here and any other place that I pay attention to, we always all have one alert, and it happens to be high pollen alert, as every tree and flower is in full bloom. And any of you out there that have allergies know that sneezing, feverish, runny eyes, and cough all could be symptoms of inhaling irritations that you could be allergic to. But hey, you know, plausible deniability, as long as all of these never-before-seen diseases have very similar symptoms, we can make it anything we want, right? We could decide it's anything we want. It's like when the swine flu outbreak happened, and they said that we had all these hundreds of thousands of cases, except we find out after the fact they'd stopped testing people like 2 months into the whole outbreak. So they didn't really even know if it had been that serious of an outbreak. But hey, they were running out of vaccines, they said, and they opened the doors with a state of emergency to the vaccine from Europe that had what? Oh, squalene in it. first time ever that it was being allowed to be used in the name of an emergency on U.S. soil. So that worked. Anyway, Strabman said she had never heard of canine influenza, but the symptoms matched exactly. Remember, too, when we were looking at the pneumonic plague that had hit the prairie dogs, and then they had found it in, I don't remember what the animal was. It was some animal that they found just recently, I believe in Colorado, that then had pneumonic plague. And they were going through all the different symptoms. And, oh, it hadn't been seen in this continent for 50-some-odd years. And the symptoms were all very similar, again, to this bird-dog flu that they say is rampant throughout our dog population. Oh, and look at that. They even used the word rampant. Oh, here we go. We got to read this. I clicked on an ad and it took me away. Come on back, doggy. Influenza H3N2 is typically found in dogs in Asia. And actually, I had read there were two strains of bird flu they'd been finding in dogs. There was H3N2, and I thought there was like an N5 as well. Influenza H3N2 is typically found in dogs in Asia. Hopefully they're not the dogs that they eat. It is now running, ding, 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 rampant through the Midwest. An estimated 1,300 dogs in Chicago are sick. Some kennels and shelters are temporarily shut down, and many owners are keeping their animals away from dog parks. The virus is highly contagious and, in some cases, fatal. And remember one of the stories that we read about Chicago? Dog kennel owners were starting to turn away customers unless, what? Yes, you had your doggy child. Whoops. Doggy vaccinated. Well, how interesting is it that California has their mandatory vaccination bill? And I still don't know if they passed it or not. But then we talked about last week the federal bill that's sitting in front of the House called the 2015 Vaccinate All Children Act. I mean, don't think that there is not an agenda here. Doggies and children will pull at your heartstrings. And maybe even chickens for the farmers. For the farmers who love their chickens. Everybody needs to get vaccinated for the safety of the herd. That is the point they're trying to hammer home. And I mean, I've seen some other stories we really got to dig into. I've seen this like spinning now the official narrative, how they've discovered that getting the measles vaccine, now there's a study that we should trust, right? Out of all these FDA studies that are proven to be fraudulent, but we should trust this one. There was a study that just came out that if you get the measles vaccine, the data shows that it protects you against all these other diseases in the future. So you should get it anyway, because for public health standpoint and for the cost of healthcare in the future when you get old and feeble, getting that measles vaccination is going to make you healthier. Bullshit. I say bullshit. Regardless of what any of these people say. And actually, I got a clip here we're going to listen to when we're done talking about doggy flu, because that reminds me, talking about scientists giving their data, working 20 years on something. I don't watch the show The Doctors. One of my friends does, actually, and she tells me about it all the time. And I don't know, that makes me think about, you know, The View or Dr. Oz. My mom watches Dr. Oz, and I just kind of roll my eyes at things like that. Mainstream medicine on morning, you know, coffee clutch TV. But I do have to say, when Dr. Oz came out against vaccinations and then they tried to assassinate him and his character and his career, that was pretty damn interesting. Well, I caught this clip through my feed yesterday when I was actually looking at something else, and they gave me some suggestions of what else to look at, and it caught my attention that the doctors on that show had come out against Monsanto and glyphosate, and they had a scientist from Monsanto on as a guest, and then They had one of the scientists from the Institute of Responsible Technology that I've been following here for the last few months that really, man, these guys are like knocking it out of the ballpark with some of the great stuff that they've been putting out there as just like a touche to the establishment. And he just eviscerates this scientist from Monsanto. So with the March Against Monsanto coming up here on the 23rd, by the way, which is this coming Saturday, it's definitely something to pay attention to. All right. My doggy flu story just got lost. Hold on. I did it again. It's like they have these perfectly positioned ads, so when you're not paying attention, you accidentally click on them. All right. Anyway, let's finish our doggy flu story. You can get dogs in close confinement together, and it spreads from one to the next, Falconer said. The tricky part about it is that dogs can be infected with it even before they show symptoms, and they can spread it to the next dog. Well, isn't that the way like most viruses work too? I mean, once you get sick and you show symptoms, you've probably been walking around being the mothership for at least 3 or 4 days, sometimes up to a week or two. Says to combat canine flu, some vets are giving sick dogs antibiotics, which, what? Only ancillary infections are helped by antibiotics. A virus will not be. Some vets are giving sick dogs antibiotics or cough suppressants. I didn't know we had cough suppressants for dogs either. But Falconer said homeopathic medicine shortened the length and the severity of Mika's case. Homeopathic remedies are available at health food stores. They don't tell you what they're using, though. If you suspect that your dog may have doggy flu, let your vet know the symptoms before you go in so the staff can take special precautions and keep the virus from spreading. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting to look at our stories of the past, bird flu and dog flu, to see how they're still keeping those stories alive, spreading them a little bit more, and keeping you scared using buzzwords. I mean, it's just amazing. And make sure you don't suffer from web-induced medical stress. I want to go to that website, too, that myhealthfinder.gov. Maybe we'll do that at the end of the show. All right, so now, I would really like to get up to that doctor's story, especially as hip pieces are coming out now, especially this week with the global March Against Monsanto kicking off for, I believe this is the third year. Mr. Nick Barnaby, our very own Mr. Nick Barnaby of antimedia.org, was one of the founders, one of the very beginning founders of the Global March Against Monsanto, by the way. That is his website, march-against-monsanto.com. And Nick, I have to say, that was actually when we first had him on UCY, was as a guest talking about the very first Global March Against Monsanto. It was awesome. So I'm glad that it has gotten awareness out there to the level of senior citizens who didn't care nor really knew anything about genetically modified foods before this all started. And I have my parents out there talking to their friends about GMOs. Even my dad, a couple weekends ago, his buddy was talking about getting some corn down at the grocery store when he was going down. He was going to grill some corn, and my dad turns around and says to him, "Well, you know, any of that corn you're going to buy at the grocery store is GMO." I was like, "Awesome, Pops. That was awesome." All right, anyway, so like I said, this next clip here, I don't typically watch the show, the daytime coffee clutch, The Doctors. But it was put out by the Institute for Responsible Technology, and it was because one of the guests was one of their doctors. And actually, I believe this, and I don't remember the doctor's name. We'll get it when he's interviewed. But he, I think, was actually one of the ones that interviewed Dr. Huber that we played, talking about the bees and the bees being affected by glyphosate as well. So anyway, let's hear this clip, and just hear how this scientist from Monsanto defends and says she'd feed her children glyphosate without ever worrying about them getting cancer, and all these different organizations that are finding, and countries, mind you, that are finding a cancer and an illness connection are doing it wrong. They're injecting the glyphosate. And what I love is the doctor that debates her even comes out and talks about the damage to the cytochrome P450 enzyme that we've talked about time and time again on the show, and how that is the root to all Western disease. I mean, this was an amazing debate. So, all right, let's play this. Oh, Jeffrey Smith, that's the doctor's name, from the Institute for Responsible Technology. So here we go.
We spent the year showing you how to remove toxins from your home, but can we be sure the air we breathe or the food we eat is safe?
The most popular weed killer in the world may cause cancer. That is the determination by the International Agency for Research on Cancer. Studies of the chemical glyphosate, the active ingredient in the Monsanto product Roundup, have shown that it causes damage to chromosomes and DNA in human cells, and also increases the risk of cancerous tumors in mammals. After review of the studies, they officially classified glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans.
And so
now what's huge about this is that the doctors, the show, is like highly mainstream. And they kicked this segment off with this, you know, little montage saying that international scientists think that it's probably carcinogenic. And the four doctors that are on this board that actually are the hosts of this show, I mean, they are beating this into the ground with, why would I feed my kids this? I mean, this is just so awesome. I really think we're going to kick Monsanto in the teeth. And this makes me freaking happier than you guys know.
Obviously, anyone who read this headline, you know, it raises eyebrows. And we did invite Dr. Donna Farmer, a toxicologist with the Product Safety Center at Monsanto Company, to join us and talk about your perspective. Because anytime you hear the word cancer associated with food, rightly so, it raises concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. I can understand why there are concerns. And thank you for having me here today. Because like with you guys, I've seen those headlines, and I know people have a lot of questions. I can tell by your audience how they felt about it. And I'm here as a scientist, and I'm also a mom. And I'm here to answer some questions as well as address some of the confusion with the IARC report. Because when you look at what they came to in conclusion compared to regulatory agencies, third-party experts, and authoritative scientific bodies around the world, for all the 40 years this product has been in use, this is a completely different departure. And so even recently in January, the German regulatory authorities on the behalf of the European Union completed a multi-year, very comprehensive review of glyphosate, and they concluded there was no carcinogenic risk to humans and that it didn't cause damage to DNA.
So you're a scientist, basically. Mm-hmm. So you're studying this, and you feel 100% comfortable. You even said you have kids, so you're a family person.
Yes.
You would feel very comfortable knowing that pretty much every day of your children's life, they're being exposed to this.
Yes. You know, I'm a scientist at Monsanto for 20 years, mm-hmm. and this has been the molecule that I've studied all of those years, and I'm absolutely confident of the data behind it. And again, you're probably all saying, yeah, well, she's with Monsanto. But again, don't take my word for it, because the regulatory agencies around the world for the past 40 years, looking at very comprehensive reviews, have come to that conclusion. That's why it was so strikingly different that IARC did.
We do have someone from sort of the alternative perspective. But the one thing I did want to ask is that it's not like IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, is some biased organization. And just to be fair, they're basically saying that glyphosate probably could cause cancer in humans, but not that it probably does. So even acknowledging that, to me, you know, obviously, anytime you have an international agency and it's made up of so-called experts and they don't have any quote-unquote skin in the game, that raises alarms to me, as not just as a doctor, but as a consumer, because it's not like they have some agenda.
The Dutch parliament voted to ban it, basically, throughout the whole country. Well, what I'm wondering is, in our country, What's different about the data in the Dutch parliament?
I'm telling you, it's very controversial because it's country to country. Because, you know, there are countries like Germany saying, okay, well, it's safe. And then other countries saying, well, it's not safe. To me, there's so much confusion.
90% of our crops are being sprayed with Roundup. I really want to know.
Bam! This is just, oh my God, I was like cheering these guys on.
And so, really quickly before I bring in our next guest, I guess the question from an objective perspective is why does IARC give this or make this conclusion at all?
Well, IARC
if there's absolutely no risk.
IARC is not the WHO. IARC is a program under the WHO, and there are three other programs under the WHO that have concluded glyphosate is not carcinogenic or genotoxic. IARC,
and yes, we trust the World Health Organization.
Has a very different process. They've been around 40 years, and I think it'd be interesting to all your consumers to know that IARC does classifications of all other kinds of substances like pickled vegetables, aloe vera extract, coffee, radio, you know, your cell phone use, and now glyphosate. And they even classify things as professions such as barbers and frying cooks. And so they just have a very different way they look at it. So I'll give you an example of one of the studies. They actually injected the Roundup formulation into the abdomen of the animals, and they did have an effect. But that's not a relevant route of exposure for somebody who's going to be spraying that herbicide. So that's what we look at and the regulatory agencies look at, and like the other bodies in the World Health Organization. IARC only looks and says, oh, if I inject it, there's a hazard. So there's different ways that we look at the data. And if we had any indication or any concerns about the safety of this product, we wouldn't be putting it out there.
I've spent a lot of time reading about this recently. IARC, again, when they classify something as a probable carcinogen, they're not saying that it does cause cancer necessarily. But it's interesting when I was reading through, because there are a lot of things that we do in our lives that increase cancer risk. Our goal right now is to figure out cost, benefit, the truth. We also have joined us the founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology and author of Seeds of Deception, Jeffrey Smith. And he's from Santa Fe, New Mexico right now. And you do believe that this chemical is carcinogenic. And tell us why you have that perspective.
Well, we exposed for many years the company Monsanto that's making these claims. On two different continents, they were convicted of lying about the toxicity or the ability to degrade in the soil of glyphosate, convicted by a New York court and a French court. Many scientists who reviewed their research have declared it tobacco science, catching them red-handed, specifically designing their studies to avoid finding problems. They've also been convicted of quietly poisoning the people of Anniston, Alabama, with their PCB factory, knowing that the people were getting hurt and they were fined $700 million. Let me speak also about the nature of glyphosate. Glyphosate was originally created to clean industrial boilers and pipes because it grabbed metals and minerals and pulled them out. When it was spilled on the ground, they showed that it killed plants. Monsanto came along and patented it as an herbicide. It was released this week that the levels of Roundup that's considered safe in drinking water causes endocrine disruption in human cells as well as toxicity. Also this week, another published study showed that it invoke antibiotic resistance in pathogenic bacteria. It also blocks the ability of the gut bacteria to produce aromatic amino acids. And as you know, that can produce serotonin and melatonin and dopamine, absolutely essential. It can also block the production of what's called CYP enzymes, and they're used in the liver to detox. So if they're not functioning correctly, all of the other toxins in the environment can be more dangerous.
Jeffrey,
bam! This guy kicks ass!
That list sounds horrific, and I would opt for exactly none of those things, obviously. But I want to run something by you that I read when I researched this, that it's estimated that it would take almost 10 years and over $250 million to develop as an industry a new active ingredient for a safe or even just a new effective pesticide. So my question to you is, what is the solution? Because we need to eat, and I would rather not spend $100 for a bunch of bananas because there's only going to be 10 bunches of them on the planet if we don't have a way to grow them effectively. So what would be the safer answer?
The biotech industry and the chemical industry want you to compare one chemical to another. But if you look at organic agriculture grown without these agrochemicals, it turns out they have at least the same level of yield as the conventional agriculture. And in developing countries, it can increase yield by 100%. And these are very, very major studies. We don't need these chemicals. Prior to World War II, we didn't use them.
Jeffrey, really quickly, just because I want to give the floor back to Donna, the things that Jeffrey said are scary.
You know, that's his perspective as an author. As a scientist, that is my job, to look at all those allegations that he brings up all the time. And we look at those every single day. And the regulatory agencies look at those as well. And when we look at glyphosate and we look at how it's used, regulatory authorities have all approved that all labeled uses of glyphosate are safe for humans.
And so,
yeah, it's safe for humans, as we find out. Taylor and what was the other dude? The FDA and the USDA have both been compromised by big agrochemical.
So we've talked often on the show about how in an ideal world, we would all buy organic and eat organic foods, but we have a lot of people who rely on a very, you know, I come from a family of farmers, and they use herbicides, and they have to stay afloat. I mean, there are so many chemicals in the world now that we have to be aware of, and you always have to balance the benefit versus the harm. And, you know, at the end of the day, if everyone had their own garden and could plant things organically, and, you know, that would be the ideal.
Ideal world, right?
And I, you know, my hope, and I'll be quite frank, is my hope is that there are more studies done. There are more studies to figure out, you know, obviously, Donna, you feel very strongly, you know, that glyphosate is not carcinogenic, that you feel very safe, you know, but you have to understand why there are people who are dubious, like Jeffrey, and many people in our audience, because there is, it would make sense to the casual observer that
there is evidence to support that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what? I agree, and I understand why everybody is concerned, and there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet. But I will tell you, and I mean this very honestly, I am extremely highly confident in this product as a mom, and then I can back it up as a scientist.
And there's just so much misinformation on the internet. She said it. All right, guys, if you can believe it, we have about 15 seconds left. I just was so excited over that. That was on mainstream TV, Coffee Klatch, The View Morning Doctor Show. All right, make sure everyone sticks around. It's Tuesday. Mr. Kevin Blanch is up live next. Then we have Nuclear Hot Seat with Libby Halevi. I don't know. 6 p.m. live, Chuck O'Chelly against the wall with JJ Inc. at 8, 9 is primer time. At 10 p.m., new slot next week for Geoengineering Watch with Dave. At 11 o'clock,